We're just two kids living in America, and we're going right for the throne. And the thought of hardship fuels our hysteria. We wear our vanity like a coat. Breaking lightning splits our conversation. The silence echoes off the street. Maybe right now is some lukewarm destination. And maybe I'm talking in my sleep. Yeah, and every heart must eventually come.
Okay, so you said you grew up, or for your bio, you grew up a small town out of Dayton. What was the name of the city?
Well, I grew up in the Englewood Clayton area.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so are you familiar with that?
No.
Oh, okay. It's north of Dayton, and the school district I went to sort of encapsulated what was, you know, suburbs, and then all the way out to farm fields with a neighborhood with one stoplight. And, you know, it even captured some of the cusp of outside of Dayton, too. So it was pretty interesting growing up with a diversity of people. And they've developed a lot of it. There's a Walmart there now where the baseball fields were, and it's changed a lot. There were, you know, a lot of time I spent with friends out in cornfields shooting guns or having bonfires and things like that.
You went to high school there, correct?
I graduated from Northmont High School.
Okay, did you pursue music like as a hobby during your schooling years, high school?
Yeah, I picked up the guitar when I was like 7th or 8th, or more like 6th grade, and then quit and then picked it back up. Mm-hmm. But my father has had a guitar, and we'd always sing songs at Christmas. And both my sisters are musical. They sing and play piano and things like that. And so, you know, I was put into piano lessons, and I just stupidly never practiced. I picked up the guitar and started teaching myself. Mm-hmm. And so I played, you know, when you're young, there's not really opportunities, at least I couldn't find them in the Dayton area, to perform as a 15-year-old. I don't think anybody would want to hear that anyway. And then, yeah, I mean, in high school, I did like our senior talent show and played Elliott Smith, Waltz Number 2, and that was sort of like a big deal. And then, you know, when I got in college, coming to Columbus, there was all sorts of open mics, and played at the BW3s and everything up on campus for a while during college, too. So it was more, you know, I think the opportunities came out, and, you know, started taking things more seriously after high school and after college, too.
And did you go to Ohio State for college? Yeah,
I did.
What were you pursuing there as a major?
Political science and economics.
Okay. When was it decided that you were going to actually pursue music as a career?
I was looking at going to law school and getting into politics, and you know, I decided I didn't want to go to law school, and I got out of college, and all of a sudden I had a lot of time on my hands. And I, you know, I kicked around moving to L.A. or something like that and doing screenwriting, but I found myself drawn towards writing songs. I'd been doing it for a while, but then started writing it because there's this immediacy. You can write a song on a Wednesday afternoon and go out and perform it Wednesday night at an open mic. And so that was very appealing to me. And, you know, I work during the day, and I play music, you know, every night if I can.
Uh-huh. In an interview that you were performing cover songs of rap songs and the songs from the 1980s. What do you remember the specific songs you were playing?
Yeah, I played songs from old hip, like stuff from the 90s, and it was like I played California Love by Dr. Dre and Tupac, and I did Regulators by Warren G, and I would do just goofy covers of like I'm So Hood by, I think it's DJ Khaled. Like I just sort of take these songs and put them either into a sort of a ballad format or like a bluegrass country thing, just to sort of juxtapose what people were familiar with, which with something that, you know, is would sonically probably be the exact opposite of it.
Do you still sneak those into your set list now, or is it all your music?
It's all my music. I mean, it's sometimes people who used to go to those shows are like, why didn't you play
I'm so
confused. This. Or I yeah. Why don't you play Regulators or something? I'm like, I'm not doing. You know, it's when you're playing on campus, it's a totally different experience than when you're, you know, like playing at Space Bar or Rumba or King Avenue 5 or whatever. To a paying audience,
right.
You know, I probably could, and some people might get a kick out of it, but I don't want to do that. You know, I did that for a couple years, and that's all I really want to do of it.
Do you ever hear those songs now just on the radio and be like, just want to plug your ears, or do you still find somewhat enjoyment in them?
I love California Love. I could listen to that.
Yeah,
I could listen to that every single time it comes on the radio.
Uh-huh.
I could listen to it on, you know, any time. Regulators is okay.
Uh-huh.
It, you know, it's fun, and I kind of like my version better. But I like hip hop. I like all that old early 2000s rap and stuff like that. So I mean, but those old cover songs, you know, I'd also play like I'm Gonna Be 500 Miles by the Proclaimers and Aha, mm-hmm. and Take on Me and I'm the One Who Wants to Be with You. I think that's the name of the Mr. Big. And I can't really stand those tunes too much anymore because I played them so much and
uh-huh.
it just kind of became ridiculous.
Far too many times you hold and toe the line, even when you're caught finding out how bad it can be, and you get brought down to your knees. Well, I heard you got a thirst for truth. My friends have got some work for you. You may be gone a day or two and awake with the rising sun. Might even get to hold a gun. And that's the way we're paid, digging up the graves. La-di-da-di-da, la-di-da-di-da. Now it might seem like your work's cut out and your judgment may cloud up with that, but when that feedback makes that moaning sound, but your lips will curl to a smile and you'll feel lost for a while. And you'll be praying for the seventh curse, for the river to run in reverse, 'cause everything always gets worse before it ends, and the last SOS gets sent. And that's the way we're paid, digging up the graves. La-di-da-di-da, da 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 Now don't ask how we came up with it. Just shut your mouth and read the script. Another diplomat gets blown to bits, and then the picture's gonna fade. Smile, we're all self-made. And there ain't nothing but fake gold and jewels in the hearts of those that follow you. But without us, how could you? How could you? How could you get along? Did you wrong? And that's the way we're paid, digging up the graves. La-di-da-di-da, la-di-da-di-da. And that's the way we're paid, digging up.
First album was American Ryman?
That's correct.
Was there a reason to you just having it just like really bare bones and just having your guitar?
Yeah, I mean, I intended it to be that way. Now, prior to this, you know, I'd worked trying to get another album out with the band I was with at the time, and it just, a lot of things were happening, and I don't think I was really capable of getting it together. And so I had a lot of these songs I'd been sitting on and playing solo for a number of years. And I got to this point where, you know, I've been playing for years and playing out, and you know, people were coming to shows, but I didn't have a body of work. Nothing to show for it. I mean, people would know that I'd played and they'd come out and hear these songs, but nobody had a disc of it except for like bootlegs and old demos that I would burn and sell for a few bucks. Mm-hmm. So I said, well, this is, I gotta do these songs. I gotta get them out. And some of them were newer. Some of them I had written closer to the recording date. But I was just like, I'm gonna try to present it as I do when I play live. Okay. And I'm going to play these songs I've been playing for a long time. So it was also, I didn't feel like waiting anymore. And it's, as I mentioned, you know, as we were sort of getting settled in here, it's a lot harder to do it with a full band.
Yeah.
You know, these the big shot rock stars make it look easy because they have access to producers and studios and studio musicians, and they can crank stuff out. But when you're trying to do it yourself on your own budget, on your own time and your band members' times, it can become quite a task. So, you know, I wanted to get the songs down. I wanted to get them out. I wanted to do it and, you know, move on from there.
Mm-hmm. You said that most of those songs were newer songs. Were there any songs that you were kind of performing and you've written over the years that made it onto the album? Or did you just want all fresh material for that?
No, for the new one or for the American Rhyming?
American Rhyming.
No, a lot of those were old songs. So, okay. Like Countin' Blues, Bite the Bullet, I Want You, What Luck, Failures, Small Town Kings, Nadine, and even American Rhyming. Those are all, like the newer ones were like Weekend Song, which is the opening track, and These Pills, which is the second track on the album, I think. And, you know, I do both of those songs with my other band, The Smoking Guns, mm-hmm. and... you know, aside from those two, though, I think that most of it is all that stuff I was playing out, playing, you know, opened them, did them with open mics, and then, you know, just kept playing them.
Okay. And then now your new album that's coming out is Where You Find the Love, and it's with the Haymakers, and that's a much fuller sound. And would that be something you can contribute with the Haymakers, Brett?
I had played with some of these guys on and off, over the years, and I had a particular sound and particular things I wanted to have come out of the album, and the sounds that I was hearing, it was sort of a vague notion. I was like, well, I need a particular type of lead guitar player that, you know, and I need backing vocals, and there needs to be keys and you know, particular bass parts, and I didn't have it like scripted out. But I got all these guys together and we started working on the songs, and they took shape over the course of the 2 years. And some of them went directions that I never even expected. Deep Old Well is one that I had on my acoustic guitar and wrote it one afternoon, and I don't think I ever played it out. And then I gave it to these guys, and they these parts just developed that I'd never heard. And that's sort of the beauty of it, is these guys are all very talented, creative musicians that aren't there to just play a particular part. You know, I wasn't like, we're going to do country rock, or we're going to do this, you know, so play those types of parts. Cause it's easy to fall into that pattern, just do those licks and those drum patterns or bass lines or organ parts. But I think that, you know, I gave them kind of a loose idea, and they filled in the details and really gave the songs the life that they deserve.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so for this album, you said it took a lot longer to produce. Who were some of the engineers that worked on it? Because I feel like the production of it's really top-notch.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I worked with Jay Alton. He's the one I did with my first record, too.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, I got in touch with Jay because a number of my friends were recording with him, like Joshua James, when he was playing with the Paper Planes. Joshua James and the Paper Planes, he recorded with him, and I was like, man, this just sounds fantastic. I said, who did you go to? He said, Jay. And like the Shaw Brothers, Andy Shaw Band, they record with Jay, and I was like, well, this sounds great. And when I did my first record with him, he was such a pleasure to work with, you know, gives constructive criticism and sort of knows where things should go, and is very good at helping pick the sounds and the parts, and, you know, kind of coaching you through some of the sessions. So he recorded and mixed it and produced it. So some of the parts, you know, I'd sit down and we'd we go through it, but a lot of the things, you know, he pulled out the, you know, some of the takes that were really killer and, you know, made a lot of smart decisions in that regard. And then Brian Lucy, from Magic Garden Mastering, did the mastering of the tracks.
Where was it, at Sonic Lounge with Jay?
I recorded at Sonic Lounge, okay. And then we did some of the parts at Jamie's house. He's the guitar player. And then we did vocals and other ancillary percussion at Jay's house.
Okay. And are you going to tour a lot more with this album?
That's the plan.
Yeah.
I did a little bit of work out of town last fall and, you know, try to build connections that way. And I'm hoping that should the planets and schedules align, you know, we'll be able to do some stuff regionally in Dayton, Cincinnati, mm-hmm. Pittsburgh, Buffalo, Cleveland, and then maybe take it towards Chicago or the East Coast or something. So we'll, you know, start making the phone calls now, and we'll see what happens August, September.
Yeah, when you say we, do you also mean the Haymakers will be with you?
If it's possible to bring them along, I would, absolutely. Uh-huh. You know, if I have to go do it solo or with my drummer, you know, some sort of variation, you know, do that. But it's my intent to go with the band.
And were you a full-time musician with your when you released your last album also, or were you still... Did you still have another job on the side there?
You know, I was. It's sort of interesting. I was at a job for 6 years and left. I wasn't happy with that job, and I just quit. I didn't really have a plan for what I was going to do, and that was sort of around the time when I began recording the record, and then so I had a lot of time off to listen and work and go to Jay's house and record that stuff there. And, you know, in the meantime, I was applying to places because, you know, you got to have some sort of sense of some sort of source of income. Right. But nothing was panning out. And then, you know, right before the record release, I got offered another job. And so I took that. So I was briefly unemployed there for about 3 months and also probably my most productive musically. So that's sort of how it happened. And, you know, if I hadn't gotten a nice offer to work sort of a, you know, work a day job, I, you know, things weren't looking up. So I was like, well, you know, let's see how this music thing might pan out if I, you know, just dedicate 100% to it. But there's a lot of risks involved. It's very risky. Yeah. And albums don't pay for themselves. Not yet. I haven't been fronted that $100,000 from Capitol Records.
I'm sure it's on its way.
Hope so. It's so, you know, it's I'm still working at it though. It's still I'm still devoting a lot of time and energy and thought to performing and writing and recording. It's just that I can't do it 24 hours a day just yet.
Right. Okay.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I sit when I have downtime at work, I'll sketch out lyrics and stuff. So I'll listen to music and keep myself educated and sharp. So it's not, you know, even during the day when I'm plugging away at a desk, the wheels are still spinning.
You're a workaholic in every sense, I think.
Sometimes I can burn myself out.
Okay. And then, another thing that you could with music, but kind of outside your career, you did like a session thing live called Between the Notes.
Yeah.
And then Honky Tonk Happy Hour. Were those similar things for week?
No, they were different.
Okay. Can we talk about Between the Notes first then? Like, can you explain what that was?
It was a talk show.
It's a talk show?
Where I'd interview musicians.
Right.
Just like this.
Yeah.
You can take it. I didn't copyright it. Uh-huh. It was a live talk show where I would interview local musicians about their music career and talk to them about their life, mm-hmm. And about their music and you know, sort of in an informally formal way. When there was an audience there, it was really nice and they could ask questions and things like that. It was interesting for me to do because I'd done interview type stuff before, but never, you know, in a very structured format. And the Wild Goose was really cool about partnering with me to house it and help with it. And, you know, it was useful to me to understand people's methods and backgrounds in context for the music that they write. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of really interesting people in the city that play music that I don't think a lot of people really know about. and you see him on stage or you read about him in the paper, but there's a lot of really interesting history and a lot of really interesting stories and people that don't get highlighted very much. And you know that because you're sitting here interviewing all kinds of people.
And
that was sort of the goal of it, was to give people a more personal perspective of the person they see on stage.
What did the Honky Tonk Happy Hour entail? Was that interviewish or was it just all live?
Oh no, that was like a sideshow. It was the brainchild of Jamie Lynn Smith, who lives up in Knox County, and she went to New York and came back, and she did this thing to highlight country musicians and roots acts here in Columbus. And I think she did it for about a year. And then she said, I've got this new job. I can't do it anymore. Do you want to do it? And I had some unexpected free time. And I said, that sounds good. That sounds like a lot of fun. So every first and third Friday of the month, I booked country music acts, Americana, roots, bluegrass, all that kind of stuff to play, usually two bands, like a solo opener and then a full band. And we'd pass the hat. I had a big cowboy hat that caught on fire at one point, so there's a big burn mark on it. If you ever go to the Shrunken Head, you'll probably see it. It's like, I think they still use it for the happy hour. But we passed the hat around. They'd put in money, and the bands would get paid pretty well. And then we'd do a raffle at the end of it, when it was always a big, big to-do. You know, we'd have the drummer, and sometimes the bands would like play music while I was drawing this stuff, and you know, bands would give CDs or t-shirts, and but there was always an apple pie. That was sort of the sticking point, is that there would always be an apple pie at the end of it, and someone would win it. And it was a lot of fun. It was a blast. I did it for 3 years, and I kind of got to this point where I was, you know, hosting a lot of things and not performing at a lot of things. And I wanted to redirect my path to performing and writing music.
Okay. But is the Honky Tonk Happy Hour, that's still going on?
Oh, yeah.
And who's doing it now?
It's actually between two friends of mine, Ian Hummel and Brent Miller. And Brent hosts the first Friday, and then Ian hosts the third Friday. And they're great. Brent fronts a band called the Boondogglers. And Ian fronts the Apple Bottom Gang, and plays with Zach Whitney in with that called Brothers, and they're both real steeped in country music and real sharp and real good hosts. Neither of them were willing to take on the full responsibility, but I was able to talk both of them into cooperating to take one week a month, and it's I'm glad, because it's such a good show, and the people who go there have a lot of fun, and they interact, and it's kind of built a little community around that. Just, you know, everyone would come out on a Friday evening and just hang out and drink beers and listen to good country Americana music.
Would you ever make, you know, a comeback on that, like just one-off thing? Would you ever be interested in doing that for the Honky Tonk Happy Hour?
Like performing?
Either that or hosting again.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to take over the responsibility of booking and producing it and doing. I would host again if they wanted me to. And I've played it. I played with the Smoking Guns, and I played with the Haymakers, and I've done it solo too. So they bring me back in. I'm still in the loop. I don't avoid it. I'm never touching this again. You can't. You know, it's not like I'm a congressman who, you know, wants to get a lobbying job and can't do it for 2 years. They let me back, and they let me play around a little bit.
What were some of your memorable moments from those, stick with the Honky Tonk Happy Hour, like maybe a performance or?
Every show was memorable in its own way.
Okay.
There were some nights where it wasn't good, and not good as in like, it just from a show perspective. One time I felt really bad. I had a band, fantastic bluegrass band, come in from out of town, from Zanesville, and that evening we got hit with a snowstorm, and so it was like me and them and like one other person in the bar. And you know, I know you're like, what's the best moment, but there were things like that
stuck out to you.
Yeah, and it was sort of there are interesting things like that, but what I loved the most about it was that there were regulars, and there were people who were there every single show that participated and would always be very generous. And what always stuck out to me was that, you know, what's the the cliche is that, you know, people will spend $20 to go see a movie, but they won't spend $5 to see a live band. You know, like it's sometimes a pain in the neck just to get people to pay a cover. But when we'd pass the hat, he would give lots of money. I mean, bands would get paid there better sometimes than they would going out to play a bar gig for a door cover. And so it's not the money necessarily that I'm impressed with, it's the generosity and support of the people for the musicians that came along with the happy hour. And that's always something that I've always held dear and found to be, you know, a positive ray of hope in an otherwise sometimes dark world.
Obviously, your music, would you consider your music country? Do you have a more specific genre?
I don't.
Or would you not consider it anything at all?
Oh, you know, you can. I don't fit in anything. There are elements of country music in what I do. There are elements of blues and country blues. And, you know, I dig some indie rock and folk, you know, folk too. Folk's big. And then, you know, a little bit of jazz and stuff. I'm by no means a jazz player, but there are things in the stuff that I write and things that I enjoy playing that have elements of that. So, you know, you could classify, I think on Reverb Nation or whatever, I put folk, country, and blues. Because if you had to boil it down, I think that's, you know, the three elements that really stand out the most in what I do.
All right, and another interesting question, I asked a lot of the musicians here in Columbus, like, why do they choose to stay in Columbus? Like, as opposed to, like, moving to Nashville or L.A.? Like, what's kind of keeping you here? I mean, I mean, family maybe, but is it just the scene that you're in that you really enjoy?
I haven't had a, you know, it's going to sound bad for me to say this, but I haven't had a really compelling reason to leave.
Okay.
But I love it here. I love Columbus. I like the musicians here. Mm-hmm. One thing that's always expressed to me, especially when people come from out of town, is like, you guys are so nice here. Like, it's such a pleasure to be here. And, you know, stations like WCBE support acts from out of town. Uh-huh. And so there's a sense of community, I think, that exists. And musicians can kind of find their niches and, you know, like, I don't get over to Carabar much, but then again, I don't know how many people that go to Carabar regularly came over to the Honky Tonk Happy Hour. And there's groups that build up around genres, but I don't think that there's, you know, animosity or, you know, like a ruthlessness that one might perceive elsewhere. I think everyone's generally very supportive in the venues, by and large, are supportive of the musicians. So that sense of community is something very valuable in Columbus that that I don't think you get in a lot of other cities. And other people who've moved out are saying, man, it's different and it's better in Columbus. It's not like that out here. And then what's interesting, a lot of people move out to L.A. or New York, and then they always end up coming back.
Right.
And, you know, for whatever reason, but they're always like, it feels good to be home. Mm-hmm. Columbus isn't by any means a podunk town for music either. People have a tendency to characterize, or have had the tendency to characterize, Columbus as, you know, a pit stop between Chicago and Pittsburgh, or Nashville and, you know, whatever. Sort of a throughway. But there's a lot of very talented musicians, a lot of very talented national acts, a lot of very talented regional acts that live here and perform here. And that's exciting too. So to me, you know, the idea of, well, you got to move to LA or you got to move to New York. You gotta, I mean, you know, it's different because you're in a different crowd and you're there's potential to be, you know, I guess discovered or whatever, but there's a great value in living in a city that has a strong musical culture, and I think that Columbus has that, and you know, that's one of the reasons why I stick around.
Columbus has the best music scene in the world. I will say that until the day I die. Okay, and then recently you tried out for the NPR Tiny Desk.
Yeah.
I know it was just a video, but like, what kind of drove you to that? Was it just?
Well, yeah. I mean, everyone. I think everyone who entered wanted to win.
Right.
I don't think anyone entered just like, I'm gonna this is going to make me feel good. You know, everyone wanted to win. And there were thousands of entries, just thousands of entries. And I saw it on Twitter. And I don't know if it was another musician I follow who you know, is like a national or regional, but like, hey, you know, we just did this and you have, I think it might've been the NPR account. I was like, there's a week left to do this. And I was like, well, I should do that. I should get everyone together and we should do a video. And fortunately, I was able to find some people to film it, and a bunch of great guys I know. And then the band was able to get together one evening and we just set it up in my basement and cranked it out. It was a lot of fun. We obviously didn't win, but that's okay.
Right.
We have a great video out of it, and it was a great experience working with everybody. You know, it was nice also to see a lot of other Columbus musicians doing it.
Yeah.
Once I submitted mine, I saw Counterfeit Madison and Saturday Giant. I saw both of theirs, and then like I think Domes and Josh Gandy did one, and a whole bunch of people, and it was really cool. Kelly Zulo did one. And she was actually featured on their Tumblr. They would pick out bands that they liked or videos that they liked, and I would go check it every day. I'm sure everyone else was checking it too. And they're like, from Columbus, Ohio, Kelly Zulo. I'm like, that is awesome. Uh-huh. You know, someone from Columbus made it on their daily post, uh-huh. And so it was fun, and it was nice to see other people doing it too.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but you did Where You Find Love for that one.
That's correct.
That's true. Is there a reason why you chose that one? Well, was most completed at the time, or
the record was pretty much done. So it was like, uh-huh. Which one are we going to choose out of that?
Uh-huh.
And we were all sort of sitting there, and I was thinking about doing like Magic in an Empty Room or something like that. And we all kind of talked about it, and we decided that we would do that one. Mm-hmm. The guys in the band really like that song, and I like it, and it's the title track. And it, you know, for the setting, being in the basement, you can't really play too loud, otherwise you lose a lot of the sound. It gets drowned out. So, you know, I don't want to go completely acoustic like a lot of acts were doing on there, but you know, I wanted to keep the electrics, and so that was a nice balance between being able to sort of rock it out and also keeping it a little more mellow.
Would you ever do any other music competition,
like American
like,
Idol,
or like American Idol,
The Voice?
Yeah.
No, I think those are silly. I mean, those are game shows,
uh-huh.
And then the people that get roped into them and get those contracts, they're just totally abused. You know, and I'm not what they're looking for. I don't need to go drive 6 hours and stand in the cold to sing for 5 seconds and be told I'm not what they're looking for. Cause I'm not a pop singer. I'm not a song and dance man. And, you know, I think the NPR thing encouraged a level of creativity and originality, mm-hmm. that a lot of those shows don't. You know, those shows are there to make money for Simon Cowell and the producers. They're not there to really promote somebody creating. They're there to find a body with a nice voice that they can market. And, you know, that's not something that's of interest to me. If something came along like the NPR thing, or maybe a songwriting competition, maybe I tend to sort of stay away from the competition stuff just because it's, you know, it's easy to get worked up over. I was actually in another competition. I was in the CD 102.5.
Oh, I saw that.
The, you know, we're trying to wrangle votes for that. I was like, I'm out of politics, and here I am. Like, can I have your vote? And that was cool. But you know, you can't. You see a lot of these things on TV at the American Idol. People are like staking their careers on winning a contest, and I just don't want to do that. Now, you know, from Columbus, Josh Krajicek.
Yeah.
Did X, was it X Factor?
It was, yeah.
He did that. He is fantastic. He is a fantastic singer. Mm-hmm. And I think he rightly deserved making it all the way to the top three. And he, I think, has been able to transition that into, you know, a career beyond Columbus. I don't want to speak too much about Josh because mm-hmm. I'm not too familiar with his body of work, but he's a really great performer. You know, I think that he also works super hard. So it's not like he was like, well, this is going to change my life, like a lot of people think those shows will. I think it was just a building block to the career that he'd already been working very hard at building himself.
And you can only hope to blame yourself for why you can't sleep at night. A little peace of mind never hurt no one, but you're closing off your heart. That's where you find love. That's where you find love. Getting thinner, but there's a drink for every smoke, and a good night's when you're hanging out and someone's laughing at your jokes. And though you leave alone, you can count on them to whet your destructive appetite. That's where you find love. That's where you mind. Every chance you get, and every day is boom or bust, and you laugh and rub out your cigarette on the words of those you trust, but they will keep a light on your stormy shore till you're washed up on the stones. That's where you...
Where do you see your career in 10 to 20 years?
My music career?
Yeah.
Boy,
You can lie. I won't keep tab of it in 10 years.
Okay. Well, you know, with the internet now, they can look this up and go, hey, you really exceeded expectations, or you really, the bottom fell out on you. It's hard to tell, because a lot of, you know, success is hard work and dedication, and there's an element of it that's luck. And so in 10 years, I would like to have a few more albums. I'd like to be able to travel regularly. But for certain, am I going to be on the Grammys, you know, doing a performance or whatever? I don't know. Maybe, but I'm not like, you know, I'm not saying that this is what I'm going to do. But you know, then again, maybe I'll get hit by a car in the parking lot and I won't be able to play music again. So, but you know, I hope that the writing continues. I hope that playing with good musicians continue. And I hope that, I can do that in places that are you know, here and beyond.
That's where you find love. That's where you find love. That's where you find love. Oh, that's where you. That's where you, that's where you, that's where you.